Magyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
It's a pleasure to be here with all of you today, and we're celebrating a festival. We're engaged in a festival. Actually, people would prefer to be at a festival usually than anywhere else. I know this because really the word festival means to take time to celebrate life. And whenever I meet people in ordinary life, for instance, if you go to a checkout stand and you say, "How are you doing?" they'll sometimes say, "Fine, because it's Friday and Saturday and Sunday are coming up." And that means that there's time off. People can do what they want. And in America, there's a social index that tells how happy people generally are. It's called the picnic index. And it measures how much time people get to be with their families, be with their friends, to break bread, to go out in nature, and just appreciate life in the moment. And unfortunately, the index is trending downward these days. People don't get time to celebrate life. They're running so fast to catch up with all the time-saving devices that they have, and paying for them and then fixing them. And mine don't work that well usually, but that's just my karma. Or is, do you have the same problem sometimes? I don't know. But people are spiritual, and spiritual being needs light. They need light. They need music. They need good food. And they need dancing. Don't you all need dancing? Or do you like sitting in a cubicle sometimes? I never heard that before, that I like sitting in a cubicle. I don't like to dance. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a book which was brought to this country by our founder Acharya for mass distribution, he asked that we place one of the Srimad Bhagavatams in everyone's home in the world. We have them in many different languages. There's a description of how in the spiritual world, called Vaikuntha, which is nice in and of itself, means no anxiety. There's an eternal festival going on. The devotees there are dancing, singing, and then there's a description of Vaikuntha, actually. There are airplanes, but they're for pleasure trips only. There's no business cargo. People don't have briefcases. In fact, they're flower airplanes. And the devotees are constantly singing, dancing, and this is described in a song called the Brahma Sanghita that says, Shreya kanta kanta parama purusha kalpa taravo druma bhumis chintamani ganamai toyamam ritam kataganam nakyam gamanamapi vamshi priyasaki chidanandam jyoti paramapi taraswadyamapi cha. There, every word is a song, every gate is a dance. And all the living entities there, all the residents are enjoyable and wonderful to be around. So this is a description of the spiritual world, and I don't think that anyone would refuse an offer to go to such a place. And the Krishna consciousness movement first attracted me because I was interested in yoga and knowing what the purpose of life was, and I read many books which talked about controlling the senses and looking inwardly and fasting and so forth, and I was diligently following these things and actually experiencing some happiness from that. But then I got a Bhakti Guided magazine, and in it I read that the spiritual process in this age of Kali Yuga is chanting, dancing, and feasting. And I thought, how could that be? And then I heard more about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from the Bhagavad Gita. And how this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Just as on the bank of a lake, you might see a tree with its reflection on the water upside down. The same leaves, branches, and fruits are there, only they're not substantial. But there is a real tree. And the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains how everything that we see in this world, the variety and the kind of pleasure that we're really looking for, exists somewhere else. It's just like if you see a mirage in the desert, it doesn't mean that there's no water, even though you might get disappointed chasing a mirage for a long, long time and find out there's no water there. The idea of water means there is water somewhere else. So it's a very exciting prospect to find out that although I'm not getting what I want here in this world, it looks like I should get what I want, but I don't actually get it. There is a place to actually find it. And there is a process through which one can experience that happiness, that joy, which makes one want to dance. And where the singing is from the heart, out of love. And that is the process of bhakti, which is taught by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And there are many saints who have followed the path of bhakti throughout the years. And today we're celebrating the great saint Madhavendra Puri. And he is one of the most important saints in the line of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism means the process through which we come in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are many teachers who illuminate that path and have walked the earth as acharyas. It means that they show by their example actually how to walk the path. And Madhavendra Puri was a great saint who came before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who inaugurated this Sankirtan movement over 500 years ago that we're all engaged in. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard a story about Madhavendra Puri from his spiritual master, Srila Ishvara Puri. And he told him how Madhavendra Puri was a very renounced sannyasi, a monk. And he wandered everywhere by himself, simply chanting the names of God, and he would accept only those things that people gave him, and that he didn't ask for anything wherever he went. So he had gone to the city of Vrindavan. Actually, at that time, I wouldn't call it a city, but a little village of Vrindavan, which is the birthplace of Lord Krishna. And he went to a very special place right next to Govardhan Hill called Govindakund. That place is there today. It's still very serene place. You can go and experience these serene environments for yourself and experience the spiritual potency of them. And Madhavendra Puri sat by Govindakund and he was chanting his mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he'd been fasting because he only took what people would give him. And suddenly, as he was sitting there, a little boy, cowherd boy from the village, came up to him and brought him a pot of milk. And Madhavendra Puri said, "How did you know I was here?" And he said, "Some of the women from the village who came here to get water from this little kund told me that you were here." And he said, "Nobody goes hungry in this village, and you've been here fasting, so I brought you this milk." And he gave him a pot of milk, and he said, "I'll come back for it later, for the pot." And then the little boy disappeared. And Madhavendra Puri was very surprised by this. So he took the milk, he washed the pot, he was waiting for the boy to come back, but he didn't. So that afternoon later, he dozed a little and had a dream that that same boy came back to him. And he said, "Actually, I'm Gopal. Gopal is a name for Krishna. And I was established here as a deity many years ago, just after the disappearance of Lord Krishna, by one of Krishna's great grandsons, Vajranath. And there was a Muslim attack, and at that time there was a lot of turmoil. And so the pujari, the one who was taking care of the deity, took him from the temple and hid him in the bushes and then fled. And he said, "I've been in these bushes for many, many years. And now, please come and rescue me." So when Madhavendra Puri awoke from his dream, he went to the village people and he gathered them all together and he said, "Gopal is in the bushes and I know right where he is." And it was so thick with brambles that they had to bring machetes so they could cut through the brush in the jungle. And they went right to the spot he had seen in his dream. And there they found the deity of Gopal, who was halfway in the ground and covered by all kinds of bushes and leaves. And they took him out from that spot. And in the dream, the Gopal deity had told Madhavendra Puri that you should take me on top of Govardhan Hill and establish a temple for me there. And wash me with hundreds of pots of cold water because I've been in this ground for such a long time and my body's very hot. So Madhavendra Puri and some of the devotees from the village took that deity up on the hill and they put a big stone slab down and a stone behind the deity. And then they began to bring all kinds of ingredients to bathe the deity. Milk and water and yogurt. And they started, one by one, the villagers, bringing all kinds of gifts for the deity. And gradually in that place, a temple was formed, just by the cooperation of all the people in the area. And two very nice Brahmins came from Bengal. And Madhavendra Puri engaged them in worshipping the deity. And now there was this beautiful temple on the hill. And then one night, Madhavendra Puri had another dream. And Gopal came to him again and said, "Actually, even after you're bathing me with hundreds and hundreds of pots of water, my body is still hot. I need sandalwood paste. And now you have to please go and get me some sandalwood paste and bring it back here and grind it and you can put it on my body." So Madhavendra Puri immediately went off to in the direction of Jagannath Puri, many hundreds of miles away, to get this sandalwood. It was very difficult traveling at those times. And he went all the way to Jagannath Puri. He got the sandalwood and camphor to bring back. And he had some people helping him to carry it. And on the way back, he visited in Ramuna, and this is New Ramuna, this temple, the temple of Gopinath. And while he was at the temple of Gopinath, he observed how the pujari was offering sweet rice. And previously he had stopped at that temple and he had tasted the sweet rice, and now he was thinking, if I could just get another taste of this sweet rice and understand exactly how it is made. Just like Arapurva, he's always asking these questions. How to get recipes so that they will be especially pleasing for the deity. He was thinking, how can I taste this sweet rice and find out exactly what the ingredients are so that I can offer them to my Gopal deity? And just as he was thinking that, he realized, oh, I'm trying to enjoy the sweet rice that's going to be offered to the deity. And he felt very ashamed of himself. So he went outside the temple and he went a distance away and sat down and began chanting. And then that night, the pujari who takes care of the deity had a dream. And in the dream, the Gopinath deity came to him and said, I have saved some sweet rice. In fact, I put it aside. I stole it from the offering, and I put it behind my dress. And I want you to come get it and bring it to Madhavendra Puri. So the pujari got up, quickly bathed, went back on the altar, and he found, yes, these pots of sweet rice, just like the ones you see on the altar now, full of sweet rice. He had saved them for his devotees. So the pujari didn't know who Madhavendra Puri was, but he took the pot of stolen sweet rice, and he went into the marketplace late at night, and he was calling out, "Where is Madhavendra Puri? Whoever is Madhavendra Puri, please come here. You are the most fortunate person in the universe. Gopinath has stolen this sweet rice for you and saved it." So Madhavendra Puri heard this, and he came and he got the sweet rice. In a great ecstasy, he took that prasadam. And then he took the pot and broke it into little pieces and wrapped it in his cloth. And every day he would take a little piece of that clay pot to remember the kindness of Gopinath. And then he left as quickly as possible, because he knew that as soon as the pujari told others that the deity had stolen sweet rice for him, that crowds of people would come to see him. And he didn't want any notoriety. He didn't want anybody to know where he was. So he went as quickly as he could back towards Vrindavan. And then he had another dream. And his Gopal deity appeared to him and said, "It's very great trouble for you to carry all this sandalwood such a long distance back to Vrindavan. Therefore, please grind the sandalwood right there in Ramuna and offer it to the Gopinath deity. And I am the same as the Gopinath deity, because as it is said in the Sri Brahma Samhita, Dipachareva hita shantanam advipetya dipayate vrivita hetu samana dharma yas tadrageva hita vishnu chaya vibhati govindamari purusham dhammaham bhajami." That the expansions of Krishna are one. Just as when you have a candle and you light other candles, the potency, the light is the same, but there still is an original candle. So Gopinath, Gopal are the same person. This is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He manifests in everyone's heart simultaneously. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I know everyone's heart. I know everything, everywhere." The living entity knows what's going on locally. For instance, I can feel pain and pleasure in my body, and I know just what's in my immediate environment. But Krishna knows everything everywhere. And he's, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, situated within everyone's heart. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesher arjuna tishtati brahmayan samabhutani yantra rudrani maya. Krishna says, this body is a yantra or a machine, and the soul is situated within the body. And he says, I'm situated next to the soul as the super soul who's giving intelligence, who's directing the wanderings of every living entity. This is the mystic potency of Krishna, that he's everywhere at the same time and he's within everyone's heart. And the deity of Krishna that we worship is Krishna himself, because Krishna has the power to manifest himself anywhere. And if one offers one's love to the deity, one's offerings to the deity, he can accept it. One time, while I was here in Toronto, we were at the Bhakti Lounge, and a man came for the first time to hear about Krishna consciousness, and he had read a few things, and he liked it. But after the talk, he came up to me and he said, "I understand this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's very interesting, and I like it very much. But just one thing, why do you worship dolls?" He couldn't understand, and many people can't, why we have the forms of the deity installed in the temple, and we worship them with many different offerings and so forth. And so I gave him an explanation that was given to me and the rest of us by Srila Prabhupada, and that is that when you mail a letter, you take it to the post box, and in Canada it has to be a Canadian post box with a special mark on it, and your letter also has to have a stamp on it, and you put it in the authorized mailbox and it will go to its destination. If you take a letter and you put it in any box on the street, will it go to its destination? Not very likely. But when it's authorized and you go by the right process, then it goes to its destination. So similarly, Krishna agrees to appear in this world so that we can see him in various forms. And this is all described by him, by Krishna himself, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in other scriptures. So when we offer something to him, he accepts it. And this is the great mystery of bhakti yoga also. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. With love and devotion, I'll take that. And so Madhavendra Puri then ground that sandalwood pulp, gave it to the Bhujaris, and during the hot season they offered that sandalwood to the Gopinath deity, and not only was Gopinath satisfied, but Gopal was also satisfied. And that temple you can still see on the top of Govardhan Hill, the deity of Gopal is now in Nathdwar and worshiped very opulently there. And Madhavendra Puri also is said to be the harbinger of the kind of devotional service that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would bring to this world. And that is that Madhavendra Puri was feeling deep separation from Krishna, this mood of separation from the Lord. And even while he was leaving this world, he uttered his famous prayers in feelings of separation for Krishna. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he greatly revered the mood and method of Madhavendra Puri and taught that to the world, that process of a pure devotional service. So there are hundreds of festivals that are rich in the history of the enactment of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. And we come together and enjoy these pastimes by singing about them, by chanting Hare Krishna, and by distributing prasadam profusely. And so tonight, the devotees have inaugurated this festival, the Sweet Rice Festival. And we'll be giving out sweet rice. Yeah. Otherwise there could be trouble. We've been here for the last several days, over the week, since Monday. My wife, Nirakula, and I came here on Monday. And all week long, we've been mostly here in this building, in the morning time, having classes about the Srimad Bhagavatam with all the devotees. We get up early in the morning, around 3:30, in order to get ready for the first ceremony of the day, Mangalartik, which starts at 4:30 a.m. And I don't think there's anywhere else in Toronto at 4:30 a.m. where people are dancing and singing with great happiness. Just after the Mangalartik at 4:30 a.m., then there are some other very joyful ceremonies. We worship Tulsi Devi, who is a goddess, who is a great devotee of Krishna. And we dance around in this temple room. And when I first came to the temple in San Francisco in 1973, I remember that the Tulsi Artik was in the morning time, just when the sun had come up, and we had skylights in the building, and the light was pouring into the room, and the devotees were dancing, and there were flowers everywhere, and the smell of incense. And just after that, devotees would sit down, and they would enjoy having this prasadam, spiritual food, together. And I was thinking, what could be better than this? Every day, the devotees coming together to chant, to sing, to offer flowers to Krishna, to smell the flowers, to smell the incense. And then sometimes in his writings, our founder Acharya talks about how hard it is to get up and go to work. In fact, he was in Tokyo when he wrote about how sometimes people commute 3 hours one way to get to a cramped little office and go on a train and then take 3 hours to come back, get back late at night just in time to take rest and wake up and do it again the next day. Well, one of the great messages coming from the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita is that life is not meant simply for working hard, but it is a festival. It is meant for singing, dancing, feasting. And that is the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to spread this process all over the world, that one can become happy by the simple things in life. Singing the name of God, taking food which has been offered first, which is spiritualized food, and hearing something from the Bhagavad Gita. These make the heart happy. And anyone anywhere can try this for him or herself and feel the great happiness that comes from direct contact with the spiritual world through sound vibration. So we go out also into the streets of Toronto. Yesterday we met many people on the street corners. We'd go out and chant Hare Krishna with drums and the cymbals and so forth. And people stop and listen, and the sound vibration is like nothing else. Cars sometimes go by and they're playing loud music. That music has a very different vibration. Sometimes people stop when they hear the chanting and they begin to dance spontaneously. I saw a young student who came and saw the chanting and she thought, this is great, I'm going to dance too. And she got in and she started dancing like this in the kirtan. And I came back a half hour later and she was still there dancing like this. Spontaneous, happy. And we stopped many people on the street corner just to show them books like the Bhagavad Gita. And we tell them that this book teaches how to become free from stress. And we ask them, do you feel any stress in your life? And what do you think people say? Unless they're lying. They say, yes, I'm very stressed. And then we say that, but you look spiritual, because we look at people in the eyes, and what can you do? When you look at someone in the eyes, you can see there's someone looking back at you. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ascharyavat paschati kashyareiram ascharyavat vadati tachaiva chanya. If you want to see the most amazing thing in this world, look at the soul. And what is the window for the soul? The eyes. If you look at anyone in the eyes, you'll notice that there's a conscious living entity looking back at you. So when we meet people on the street, we connect with them on a spiritual level, which is not hard. And we say, but you look spiritual. What is your secret? And everyone has some secret to tell of why they feel spiritual in life. And then we explain the Bhagavad Gita to them and tell them that it shows how we're just passing through. This life is just a quick journey. Our sojourn in this life goes by very quickly. And we show them the picture of how we're changing from baby to boyhood, to youth, old age, and so forth, and then we pass on again. And we show them a picture of a sage, and we say that a self-realized person treats everyone with respect, because he or she sees God's in everyone's heart, and that the body is just an external covering for the soul. And as we're saying these things, very basic truths, people nod and they appreciate and they say, yes, this is very good. It's very good. And we ask them, have you heard of karma? And what do most people say? And then we say, what does it mean to you? And what do you think they say? Exactly. They say, what goes around comes around. That's gotten around. What goes around comes around. So most people have heard of karma and they believe in it. But people don't know what to do about that. They don't know how to apply these principles. So there's a great need in the world for spiritual education, for knowledge, practically organized so that people can take advantage of it. And that's the Krishna consciousness movement. And the reason that we say it's a movement, because when people get the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, they move by themselves. They're spontaneous. It's intuitive. In fact, it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when you're hungry and you eat food, you know for yourself that you're getting nourished, satisfied, and your hunger is going away. And when you come in contact with a bona fide spiritual practice, you can feel it for yourself. You feel satisfied and you feel like your life is being illuminated. You know what to do and what not to do. It becomes clear to you. And also you feel joyful. That's the first symptom of advancing on a spiritual path, is that you feel joyful. So after being out and meeting people door to door, on the street, chanting Hare Krishna in public, we become more and more convinced about the importance of the practice of Krishna consciousness. It's what everyone's missing. Everyone's looking for something that will make them happy, that will fulfill their desires, and they're not getting it. So following in the footsteps of the great saints like Madhavendra Puri, who have showed us this path, we are a part of a great tradition, not just something invented recently, but has been passed down for many, many generations, and is tried and true by the great acharyas, or those who teach by example. So anyone, anywhere, at any time, can take to the process of Krishna consciousness and feel great satisfaction and happiness. And this temple is a great treasure. This whole community is a great treasure. It was started back in the early 1970s. And anyone who maintains a household or anything else knows how hard it is to maintain things. So this temple has been maintained very nicely for many, many years. And it's open for everyone to come and be involved in this spiritual revolution to make the world a better place by expanding the knowledge all throughout Toronto that people have about the spiritual process, and people will take to it. So that's been our week, every day, chanting with the devotees, having gatherings like this, singing. The prasadam here in Toronto has been outstanding, life-changing. And now we're sad that we're leaving tomorrow to go back to California, because we're leaving all of you. But there's another movement just like this in California. And there's another one in Denver, Colorado. And there's another one in New York and Boston. There's, if you go across the ocean and you land in London, you'll find there. And then all across, even in the Middle East, people are chanting. In fact, at every time zone of the world now, someone is performing Mangal Aarti at 4:30 in the morning and chanting Hare Krishna. So this is a great movement. And take full advantage by chanting Hare Krishna and going deeply within the process, and you will feel great satisfaction, and pass it on to as many people as you can. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.